Welcome to the Locked On Steelers podcast. I am Tony Serino alongside Christopher Carter, and this is your daily dose of all things Steelers. Today on the show, we have the Steelers Thursday practice report, who looks like they're going to be good to go and who will not play against the 49ers. We're also going to do a tape breakdown of Mason Rudolph against the Seahawks. What went right, what went wrong, and how can he improve against the 49ers? And then we'll also look at the defensive side of the ball. Chris has been tracking missed tackles and players in coverage, so we'll talk about that today on the show as well. Welcome to the show. You can find more of this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, the new Himalaya app. Wherever you find podcasts, search Locked On Steelers, hit that subscribe button. Make sure to get your daily dose. You can follow us on Twitter at LO Steelers. You can find us on Facebook, search Locked On Steelers, hit like on the Facebook page, but make sure you also join the Facebook group. You can also find us on Instagram at Locked On Steelers. All right, Chris, how you doing today?
Doing great, Tony. I'm ready for some Sunday football back on again.
Can't wait. It's a new-look Steeler team on Sunday. Mason Rudolph at quarterback, Minkah Fitzpatrick at safety. It is, it's a new world for the Steelers starting this Sunday in San Francisco. We have the injury report for Sunday. This is as of Thursday. Roosevelt Nix is not going to play this week. He sat out of practice again. He has a knee injury. Tomlin saying he will not be good to go. Mark Barron was given the day off on Thursday. Not injury related, but he did not practice. Vince Williams has a hamstring injury. Anthony Ciccolo has a foot injury. That kept both of them out, both Wednesday and Thursday, Chris. So, you know, we're at that point of the week now where, if you're going to play, even for these veterans, if you're going to play, you better start practicing. Let's start with Anthony Ciccolo, because if he can't go, that means playing time for Ola Adini. What should the Steelers' expectations for Ola be in his, what would be his first rep since really the San Diego game or the Chargers game last year?
Yeah, watch yourself with that San Diego stuff. But I think the big thing with Adini is that right now, I mean, when he got the reps in the Seahawks game, he looked good. He had a really good play on the chasing down the running back from the backside. He did. I think he is active and ready to go. Honestly, I'm not saying he should blow up the game, but I look at Ola Adini and think this guy is a comparable athletic backup, and I think he can honestly bring more to the table than Anthony Ciccolo when it comes to being a 3-4 outside linebacker rushing off the edge and contributing in the backfield. So I think, you know, don't overly rely on him, but I think that the biggest key to this game is they cannot afford to have the defense on the field for 70 or more plays. That way, when T.J. Watt and Bud Dupree are out there, they're going to be fresh. They're going to be good, and you only need Adini for maybe like 10 snaps or so. Get him some limited reps, and then when he's out there, that way he's going as strong as he can. But you're not overloading him with having to play an extended amount of snaps.
Yeah, Ciccolo had what, like 13 reps last week or something like that, right? So You would expect that Adini would be in that same range this week. And yeah, I mean, look, I'm excited to watch him play. You know, this is a guy who he was really the talk of camp before he got hurt. And then Skipper kind of took his place at that, you know, as the kind of star edge rusher. But I think there should still be excitement about Adini. You know, look, he's not, like you said, he's not going to get a ton of reps in this game. Although Bud Dupree limited with an ankle injury on Thursday. That's new. He must have rolled an ankle or something throughout practice. So really Friday, watch for that, because, you know, if it gets any worse and he can't practice, then the Steelers have a real problem there without Ciccolo or Dupree. You'll see Adini start, and then you'll have to see Jerron Elliott, who they were signed after losing Skipper to the Giants. So edge rusher could be, I guess it could be a concern if Dupree can't go, but at this point, limited with an ankle, you have to imagine he'll play through that, and that probably is minor. But no, like you said, I think Adini's going to get a limited number of reps here, but I think Steelers fans should be excited because, look, this is a guy who needs to earn his way up above Ciccolo on the roster. He clearly has not done that yet. Ciccolo was getting the reps when healthy. Ciccolo, I think, will continue to get the reps when healthy. But this is a guy in Adini who, if he pops in 2019, you know, the Steelers will have, well, they won't have to go out in 2020 and get a high edge rusher. They no longer have a first round pick, so they wouldn't be able to get a first round edge rusher to replace Bud Dupree. So this is a big moment for Ola as he tries to work his way up the depth chart, get these reps, and prove that he could be an option in 2020 as an edge rusher. Cornerback Joe Hayden did not practice again. He didn't practice on Wednesday or Thursday with a shoulder. But Chris, you know, he played through this last week. I think the expectation has to be that he'll play through this shoulder injury again.
I agree. I think he's going to be able to play through the injury. I haven't seen Hayden be the normal aggressive Hayden, like whenever he's got man up coverage. But I also think he's playing a sort of a very strong way. So far this season, he has he's looked confident. He's given up some plays here or there. He's been targeted 7 times, given up 5 completions for 53 yards, three of those completions went for first downs. So, I mean, I think he's doing fine. You know, he hasn't been the playmaker that the Steelers kind of need him to be in the secondary at some point. But that'll come with time as the defense starts to get into more favorable situations and situations where they're playing with a decent lead and there's pressure on the opposing offense to kind of force some plays. That's when you'll see this team get some more shots at those interceptions. They did force 2 fumbles. Well, one was kind of quote unquote aborted by Chris Carson on the bad handoff, but still they've gotten 2 fumble recoveries. That's nice, but we're still kind of waiting for those interceptions to start ticking in. And that's one thing with Joe Hayden is you hope that's there. But on the flip side with Bud Dupree, I think it'd be a great opportunity for him. He hasn't really shined the way that people were thinking he might after the strong preseason he had. And
no, it's actually gone the other way, right? I mean, it's exactly. He's had poor play throughout 2019.
Right. He hasn't looked strong in the first 2 games, which I mean, kind of expected because, you know, he is something that he does, but he's going to get an opportunity this weekend because Joe Staley for the Niners is officially out for the game. And he's their star tackle. And he's going to get replaced by Justin School, who is a 6th round rookie.
And well, he kind of got the same opportunity in week 1, though, against Isaiah Wynn. Now, Wynn was a first-round pick.
Yeah, but Isaiah Wynn is supposed to be the truth. Like, when the Patriots drafted Isaiah Wynn last year, I was like, that makes a lot of sense. And I thought the only thing was he went down to injury right away, so we didn't get to see much of Isaiah Wynn last year. But, you know, Wynn versus a guy like School's kind of a guy that, like, You're throwing him in there and you're hoping for the best. When he went in there and everyone's like, okay, like let's see what this guy got. And so you know, it's still not good that Bud Dupree didn't take advantage of Win, but this is a guy that he has to win against. Right. Justin Cool. And if he doesn't get at least some pressures, you know, I understand a sack sometimes it's circumstantial and the quarterback just gets away from you or you chase him into other people. That's fine. But you got to at least show that you're winning those battles over there.
For the rest of the injury report here, it's James Conner, who practiced fully on Thursday, as did Vance McDonald. Both of those players, I think Conner sat out, Vance was limited, so both are back to practicing in a full capacity. And that's good news for both guys. Look, a lot of people, Chris, feel like James Conner is due for a big week. Now, the Steelers' running game really hasn't gotten going at all this season. You know, I guess it had its best moments in the second half with Mason Rudolph. So people are expecting Conner to come up big this week. Is that your expectation as well, that this is the time for James Conner, you know, to have another 100-yard game and to look like the back that he was a year ago?
Well, it's going to be up to, honestly, funny enough, Mason Rudolph kind of opening that up for people. Because, and I actually, this, if you go to dkpittsburghsports.com today, I actually wrote about this very situation. I wrote about how, if you look at both the Patriots and the Seahawks and how aggressive they were playing the run, and I've said this on this podcast before, but when you look at the way that they're approaching the line of scrimmage, I mean, there were several plays where linebackers weren't even thinking about the pass and they were just rushing to their gaps and then just looking for the ball carrier. You saw that sort of change in the second half after Mason Rudolph hit that flea flicker and then passed the ball around a little bit. And then they were like, oh, okay, we got to be worried about play action. We got to be worried about this. And that kind of slowed them down a bit. And that allowed James Conner and Jalen Samuels to kind of get a couple better runs in the second half. So I think that this is a game that James Conner could, but it's going to only happen if the Niners are forced to respect a passing game, or at least the threat of a pass going over the middle for a decent game because they overplayed a fake handoff. You want to get these guys on their heels. You want to make sure that they're not flying to the ball, and that'll give David DeCastro and company time to get up to that second level, get a hat on those linebackers so that when Connor's getting going, he's not getting hit up in the backfield. So I think he absolutely could, but it's going to be because the rest of the offense has worked and given the offensive line some space to operate. That's what's kind of, that's what the key is here.
Yeah, the other thing to watch in this game, I think, is going to be the number of reps that James Conner gets, because look, this is a guy with an injury history. He went down last year. He was down the year before. You know, going down this early on, I think it probably will give Randy Feuchner and Mike Tomlin some pause and make this a more split backfield with Jalen Samuels. I think you will see a healthy dose of Samuels as well. McDonald being back, you know, look, he's got the back injury. Him being back at practice in a full capacity, very good, because the Steelers just don't have a lot of options behind Vance, as we've talked about. And McDonald was kind of a safety valve for Mason Rudolph, especially in the red zone. He scored both touchdowns against the Seahawks, so good to see him fully practicing on Thursday. Going over to the 49ers and their practice report, running back Tevin Coleman missing practice with an ankle injury. That'll keep him out for this game. As Chris talked about, tackle Joe Staley has a leg injury. That'll keep him out this week. Dee Ford is not practicing for the second day in a row. He has a quad injury. That would be a big loss. Look, Chris, I was on a 49ers podcast yesterday, and the first question they asked me, and I don't usually get thrown for a loop with questions even from the opposing team, but the first question they asked me was, can the Steelers' offensive line keep up with the 49ers' pass rush? And I know that there's a lot of excitement about Dee Ford and Nick Bosa, but when you talk about the Steelers' offensive line, I mean, that has been the strength of this team. But Dee Ford would be a big loss for them, because the 49ers' defense, surprisingly good through for the first 2 weeks.
Well, Tony, wait a second. I thought Dee Ford was on the Seahawks.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, I mean, Ziggy Ansah and Dee Ford changing teams in 1 week like that. Surprising this early on, but there it is.
That's just me poking fun at Tony, guys. He accidentally thought Dee Ford, because Dee Ford, there was a transaction. He was with the Seahawks for a second, and it looked like it, and then now he's with the Niners, of course. But that's just an inside joke between us with our crossover Seahawks podcast that we had. But I think it's going to be very interesting if Dee Ford can't go. I think that, you know, the Niners and Niners fans, they have every reason to be excited about their team, and there's a lot of youth there, and much like the Steelers, a lot of youth on defense. You know, they've got Bosa up front. You know, they went and got Dee Ford. They're trying to bolster what they got going on. But I think the biggest thing is that the Steelers have seen this before. The Niners got Nick Bosa, but the Steelers have faced Myles Garrett already, and they've regularly taken on premier edge rushers and found ways to shut them down. I mean, Chukwuma Okorafor, who isn't a starter right now, did well against Von Miller last year. So, I'm not thinking that this is such a big deal, Tony, as far as their pass rush. They just have to continue to communicate. I think the biggest thing that could be interesting is if the Niners, and we did that crossover episode with Brian, he said they're not doing as many like exotic blitzes, and I think that could work out in the Steelers' favor, and here's why. Mason Rudolph is the one that has to call out a lot of those blitz pickups. Now, granted, Pouncey and Foster do a lot of that communication as well, but if Rudolph is seeing it, he's going to be the one that's like, okay, I know protection's coming this side, so that means I can do this, and that helps him be able to plan his passes out a little bit better. That's where I think that the Steelers can do well. If the Steelers stop the traditional four-man rush and then the occasional extra rusher from the Niners, that could give Mason Rudolph plenty of time to get comfortable, make reads, and throw the ball.
Yeah, and I think the only way the 49ers really get a lot of a quote-unquote pass rush in this game is if we see the Mason Rudolph that we saw a lot during training camp, some during preseason, and a little bit, you know, we saw sprinklings of it last week, which is that kind of Mason who, you know, gets happy feet and kind of freaks out when his first read isn't there and doesn't do a great job of going through his progressions. We saw a little bit of that on Sunday, not a whole lot, but we have seen that throughout the training camp. So if we see that version of Mason, then the pressure will get to him because he's not going to get rid of the ball quickly enough. But other than that, I trust the Steeler offensive line to shut down, you know, whether or not Ziggy Dee Ford can play in this game. And then Nick Bosa also has the ankle injury that it's not going to keep him out. I mean, he'll play in this game, but that's something he's been nursing. Also, defensive back Jimmy Ward has a hand injury, but he will play in this game as well. All right, that is the injury report so far. When we come back, we're going to talk about Mason Rudolph. We're going to do a little tape evaluation of what we saw from Mason against Seattle and what you can expect to see on Sunday against the 49ers right after this. Hey, before we continue, I want to let you guys know about Blue Chew. Guys, remember the days when you were always ready to go? Now you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed. Listen up. BlueChew.com. That's blue like the color blue. Blue Chew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready when the opportunity arises. If you could benefit from extra function and more confidence where it counts, Blue Chew is the fast and easy way to enhance your performance. Blue Chew is prescribed online. It ships straight to your door in a discreet package, so there's no in-person doctor visit, there's no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships directly, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we got a special deal for listeners of Locked On Steelers. Visit BlueChew.com. Get your first shipment for free when you use our special promo code Locked On. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com. BlueChew.com. Use the promo code Locked On to try it free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the podcast. All right, Chris, so with so much time spent this week talking about Minkah Fitzpatrick, that trade, you know, what the expectations for the defense should be going forward, the offense should be going forward, really haven't had a chance to look backwards at the play of Mason Rudolph in this game against the Seahawks. I went back and kind of charted the entire game, and look, it wasn't a lot to chart because it was just the second half of this game, and he threw the ball, 19 times? So it's kind of 20, 21 plays to go over. The thing that I really liked about Mason Rudolph and this offense in the second half, and I think the reason why to Steeler fans it felt like such a night and day experience between Ben going out and Mason coming in, really has to do with Randy Feuchner and the play calls that they had. I mean, they ran a lot of things that allowed Mason to play within a structure, right? RPO, play action, flea flicker, screen passes, right? Allowing him to get rid of the ball quickly, go to his first read. Did you see the same thing? I mean, you know, Mason, I thought, look, everyone saw this, right? That the offense all of a sudden had some life in the second half because of Mason. I think for me, look, this is not me trying to take anything away from what Mason did, because I think he had a very good game. But to me, it was a lot about what Randy Feuchner was doing to put Mason in situations that he could succeed.
Yeah, I thought there were definitely some plays, especially a play like the flea flicker. That's like, hey, we're getting you this read. If you see it, go to it. If you don't, throw it away. And the simple things like that can really help a young guy get his confidence up. However, there were times I did see Mason read the field and go and make right decisions and find the weak spot. You know, the one out that he threw to Juju Smith-Schuster that got a first down off of second down, I was really impressed with the way that he did that, because they tried to show that Juju would be pressed. The cornerback backed off at the last second. Rudolph went right to him. And that he had the space to get the first down. I think he saw the field very well. And that's been, and you know me, and you guys know me, you guys have been listening to this podcast all through training camp. My biggest concern with Mason Rudolph is that a lot of his decisions come off of pre-snap reads, which is great.
Yeah.
But he needs to be able to adjust one if his pre-snap read is taken away. And that's where I've seen him struggle. Now, he didn't run up against that in this Seahawks game. And frankly, I'm not too concerned about the 49ers defense being, Bill Belichick-like and knowing every first read that he wants to go through. So I think he'll be safe here in that department. The biggest thing is making sure he's comfortable, giving him, you know, favorable situations to work from. And if they can establish that the passing game can be a threat early, that is what will open up James Conner, and then you can get the ball rolling, because now the defense doesn't know how you're trying to attack them, and you can try a wide variety of ways.
Yeah, I'm with you. I thought, like you said, I thought Mason did very well in his pre-snap reads. He knew where he wanted to go with the football in almost every play. And while yes, in this game, you saw him stare some guys down at times. I mean, he was more often than times right. You know, there was the curl or the comeback that he threw to James Washington, where, look, he stared Washington down the whole way, but Washington came open. It was a nice play. I tried to chart this entire thing and see how many times Mason had to play outside of structure, because that's where we know he struggled, right? Or he has struggled in the past. So I wanted to see how many times did he have to go through that. I charted four times in this game, and I thought his best play of the game was actually one of those plays, which is very encouraging. The third and five play, where his first read's not open. So, you know, instead of doing the typical Mason thing, which is, you know, head comes down and he starts freaking out and he doesn't know where to go with the football and he takes a sack. His head came down, but he didn't get that kind of deer in headlights look. You know, maybe he missed Vance down the field a little bit, but he just kind of stepped up in the pocket and ran for it and got the 7 yards. for the first down. I thought that was actually his best play, because that's something we didn't see from Mason to this point. There was the three other plays, you know, I mean, everyone's going to know these plays because they're the ones where Mason didn't, you know, had some of his worst plays. But it was, there was a second and 10 play from the 16-yard line. It's a two-man route on a play action. Neither of them are open. He checks it down to Connor for a four-yard loss. I mean, the one thing you can say about that play is maybe he waited too long to dump it to Connor. Instead of just immediately going to his check down, he kind of checks the defense, or maybe tries to look off or whatever he was trying to do. I mean, no one was open on that play. So he goes to Connor. It's a four-yard loss. I'm not criticizing him a lot in that play because there was nowhere really for him to go with the ball. Maybe you'd want him to get it there sooner. But there was also the double move to Juju that he tried to hit deep down the field. And this is where I think the kind of Mason going to his first read and staying there and not being a veteran enough to kind of move players with his eyes just yet may come back to bite him later. In fact, I think it did come back to bite him in this game. But on that play, he's waiting for Juju on the double move. Now, the corner does a good job, but because Mason's looking at Juju for the entire play, the safety's able to come over, and now all of a sudden it looks like Mason threw into double coverage. He really didn't throw into double coverage. It was single coverage when he threw it, or when he was looking at it, but, you know, because his eyes were there the whole time, the safety came over. And the worst play that he had was, of course, the two-point conversion. And on that play, that's another one where his first read wasn't there. He goes through, you know, he sees an open Juju in the middle of the field. The problem is he doesn't see that safety there, but the safety is looking right at Mason and sees his eyes and see Mason lock in on Juju and is able to go over and get the easy interception. That's the thing I think Mason's got to watch out for going forward, is that kind of locking in with a receiver and letting defenders read his eyes and know where he wants to go with the football as he's progressing through his reads. Do a better job of looking off guys and that kind of thing. And that's going to come as he gets more experience, right? A lot of these are what you would call rookie mistakes, and it makes sense because this was Mason's first NFL action. But those, to me, Chris, were the issues I had with Mason in this game. I mean, there were some accuracy issues as well. Of course, the one to Johnson is the one that stands out there, as Johnson makes a great catch. But boy, if you throw that route behind the receiver, more often than not, he's not making a great catch. It'll be the defender that actually makes the catch. But I mean, those are the plays that I thought were, you know, if I had to grade down on Mason, those are the ones. But overall, I thought this was a really positive performance from him.
Yeah, I mean, his decision making looked on point. And again, yeah, he's a young quarterback. He's going to stick to things. I mean, you know, we're recording this in the middle of a Jaguars Titans game where Marcus Mariota looks bad and Gardner Minshew looks better. You know,
it's, yeah.
But you know, I think that all in all, he showed the kind of confidence that you needed him to show as a young quarterback. And I mean, he was moving the ball when Ben wasn't. I think that's such a huge thing for this team. All they need is some more extended drive that can put points on the board and give this defense a break and not force them to be out there for, you know, 70 to 80 snaps. You know, it's, you know, if when you're in that range, that's when more mistakes happen. That's when you get tired. That's when you get stressed out. And that's also when opposing offenses are like, all right, we've tried this now 20,000 other ways. Let's try it this way, and we think we can maybe get an answer. You can't afford to give offenses that many chances in today's NFL with all the offensive friendly rules. So, lots of things going their way. I think Mason, did well enough to inspire confidence with the team. But they're going to need to support him. They can't just walk out there and think that he's going to be an MVP, you know, second year quarterback out here.
No, and I think what Fichtner needs to do in not only this game against the 49ers, but do this going forward is continue that kind of rhythm offense, right? Give Rudolph some of these, you know, these easier plays for him, right? I mean, you know, and Vance McDonald, the touchdown that Vance caught, the first one, was when I originally saw the play, I thought, oh wow, that was a nice play from Rudolph to go through his reads, find Vance on that play. When you watch it again, it's very clearly a tight end screen. But what I liked about that play is that, you know, it wasn't open to start. And Mason, once, this is another play where he didn't freak out at that moment. He waited for Vance to come open, delivered a good ball, and had to sidearm it a little bit. But, you know, I want to see him continuing that style of offense. Give him easier throws. Don't make him, you know, I don't want to see 5-7 step drops from Mason where he's having to read the field, because that right now is not his strong suit. It can be going forward. But keep that rhythm, keep the easy passes, the screens, the RPOs, that kind of thing. You know, the Steelers had, what, 1/3 and long in this entire half for Mason? If this team is ahead of the chains, the entire game. I think Mason can be very good because, like we talked about, he has very good pre-snap reads. You know, he needs to get better as the play breaks down. But overall, I think the Steelers are – I think they're okay right now with Mason. I mean, look, he's got we've only seen one half of tape. So we'll know more the more we see of him. But so far, so good from Mason Rudolph. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk about the defense. Chris has some stats about the missed tackles and some coverage that we're going to go over right after this. Hey, before we continue, I want to let you guys know about MyBookie. If you found $100 on the street, would you pick it up or would you just keep walking? Of course you take the money, so why do you keep picking winners and not betting on them? That's why I go to MyBookie. It's fast, it's easy, they pay when you win. Let's face it, where you're betting is just as important as who you're betting on. Do the smart thing. If you're going to bet football this season, bet with MyBookie. Did you know that you could bet on games after kickoff? If by the second half it looks like your bet is going to lose, you can always just take the other side. If you're the kind of guy that likes to bet a little and win a lot, try a parlay. If all your picks come through, you'll multiply your winnings, and no matter how you bet, the NFL season is the best time of year. Join now and MyBookie will double your first deposit. Use promo code LOCKEDON to activate the offer. That's promo code LOCKEDON. Visit mybookie.ag today, enter promo code LOCKEDON to double your first deposit. You play, you win, you get paid. All right, Chris, so I know you've been charting some things defensively this year, including missed tackles and players in coverage. Let's start with the missed tackles, because this was a real problem, and it's been a problem in the Keith Butler defense for a little while. It kind of came up again in that game against New England, the Steelers struggling to bring down ball carriers in that game. But let's go to this game against Seattle. What'd you see against the Seahawks as far as the Steelers and their missed tackles?
Well, with the Seahawks, I saw Terrell Edmonds had the one obvious missed one. But otherwise, he was pretty on point. He played every single snap of football, led the Steelers in tackles with 11, did have that one missed tackle that led to a first down. But that means with 11 with 12 opportunities to tackle the ball, he was around the ball 15% of the time. I call that my find percentage, and I always rank that. The important thing with find percentage that I've found is that you want your linebackers and safeties that are sort of patrolling the middle of the field, you want those guys to get the highest find percentage. Those in your you want your defensive linemen to get the highest, because that means that you're keeping people at the line of scrimmage. But you want those guys to get the highest find percentage. And so far, that seems to be kind of the case. Devin Bush was right behind Edmonds. He had 7 tackles with 2 misses. He found ball carries about 14.3% of the time. That is actually quite impressive for what Devin Bush is doing. And to carry that on over, Devin Bush led the team in tackles against the Patriots with 11 tackles. He found the ball almost 21% of the time against the Patriots with his 53 snaps in that game. So I thought that was actually pretty good. And those were the two guys I've been targeting, you know, in the offseason, saying that these guys have to be the tackle machines of this offense. They're going to be the two that are in patrol mode a lot, and they're running around the field and finding ways to solve different problems. And arguably they are doing that. Right now, both have 18 tackles with 2 misses. Devin Bush has the higher find percentage because he's come off the field a bit more. Edmonds has about 30 more snaps on the season, so he'll have the higher find percentage. But when you look at how this team's playing, all in all, you know, it's Devin Bush, Terrell Edmonds, and Mark Barron with the most tackles on the team. And Mark Barron hasn't missed a tackle yet, which I think is quite impressive and shows, you know, his consistent presence in the middle of the field. So right now, I think that the biggest things, I think the other missed tackles I had in the game were Sean Davis. He had a missed tackle. Bud Dupree had a missed tackle. But otherwise, they looked pretty solid across the board.
Stephen, well, you missed one. There's one other missed tackle.
What'd I miss?
Well, Chicolo had him.
Sorry, no, that's at the bottom of my chart. Yeah.
I know. It's just, you know, he might have had the biggest missed tackle.
His 37-yard touchdown. You're absolutely right. I just had him way down at the bottom of my chart here.
Yeah.
Because he's also the only defender that I had with snaps that didn't have a tackle. And that, yes, includes Ola Adini, who played 4 snaps and had 2 tackles, which should show you why maybe you should play Ola Adini over Anthony Chicolo.
Yeah, maybe. And hopefully that will happen this week because of Chicolo's injury. Hopefully it happens going forward. Let's talk about Devin Bush for a second, because, you know, like you said, he led the he led the team in tackles against the Patriots a week ago. You know, second in tackles in this game, although he did miss a couple, as you pointed out. But in coverage, how do you grade Devin so far? Because this was a guy who was brought in to be the a coverage linebacker. This team had so many problems covering the middle of the field. You know, John Bostic was, of course, you know, not the guy in the middle of the field. And so they went to LJ Fort, and that was probably more successful. But still, the weakness of this defense was the middle of the field, and specifically their inside linebackers. Devin, it feels like he's gotten picked on through these first couple weeks. You know, some welcome to the NFL type stuff for Devin. How do you grade him so far in coverage?
Well, so the thing with Devin is that it seems he has a type of coverage that he prefers. For example, against the Patriots, he was targeted 7 times. That was the most. In those 7 times, he allowed 4 completions, but only for 30 yards. And only one of those 7 targets led to a first down. That's impressive. Now, here's the thing. One of those targets came against the wide receiver. 6 of those targets were running backs, and that's where the majority of the catches. That's where the majority of the catches came. There were 4, at least 4 there, and he had one of them being a tight end. That's where you look at the numbers, and you're kind of like, okay, that's good. He had a really good showing there, but then you go to this Seahawks game where he was targeted 6 times and gave up 6 completions, 60 yards allowed. He gave up 4 first downs, 2 touchdowns. And if you look at them, he had 2 targets that he allowed to running backs, but 4 targets he allowed to tight ends. All 6 were completed between those, but it was the tight ends that really hurt him. And part of it, I think, is because he's not used to covering NFL tight ends just yet. You know, they're usually taller, better route runners, and more difficult to cover out in space, especially when they're running seam routes down the middle of the field. He's not exactly comfortable doing that. So all in all, right now on the season, Devin Bush is still leading the team in being targeted. He's been targeted 13 times, given up 10 catches for 90 yards, 5 first downs, 2 touchdowns. When he's guarding tight ends and being targeted, the quarterbacks are 5 for 5 when targeting him there. I think that's the big weakness. But the strength he has is when it's a running back, when it's someone in short distance, he brings them down, he challenges them. You know, he makes it have to be a very difficult completion. I also think it's a high thing that both of the quarterbacks he's faced are Tom Brady and Russell Wilson. You know, those are two great quarterbacks. They have amazing accuracy, and they're used to picking through defenses and challenging linebackers that are of the caliber that Devin Bush wants to grow into. So, you know, I don't think it's all that bad, what he's doing right now. I think he has to learn how to, counter tight ends a little bit better. And I also think what's going to have to happen moving forward is that Keith Butler is going to have to design maybe some help against some tight ends, have Sean Davis is out, but Terrell Edmonds or Minkah Fitzpatrick coming up behind him and saying, he'll chip him at the line, but as soon as they get loose, there's a safety to help and take that away. I think there's some ways to plan around that. But right now, I think Devin Bush is doing just fine. He's leading the team in tackles. He's leading the team in being targeted. And really the biggest things is that he gave up those 2 touchdowns in the Seahawks game. But other than that, he's actually been fine as a coverage linebacker right now. You know, still hasn't had an official pass defense, even though there was one play against the Patriots. I thought he broke up the pass, but the NFL stats people did not record it that way, so it couldn't be an official pass breakup. But I think he's doing just fine. He's still got to learn, and people got to remember, when you're expecting a superstar, they're not going to just click it in the first year and be like, oh yeah, I'm here. You know, Troy Polamalu took time. Ryan Shazier took time. Devin Bush is going to take time before he develops and becomes the superstar that everyone thinks he's going to be. And I still think he will be that. But all in all, right now, nothing too crazy. Just I think he needs to work on how he covers tight ends, and the Steelers should plan to support him more in those situations.
The other guy they got in the offseason, basically at the same position, right? Inside linebacker Mark Barron comes in you know, to help with that, this transition from John Bostic and really a transition from Vince Williams, as we've seen a lot of snaps this year with Bush and Barron on the field at the same time. As I look at your numbers here on the season, Mark Barron targeted second most on the team, 10 targets, 9 completions for 86 yards, 4 of those going for first downs. You know, what have you seen from him so far in coverage? And, you know, I know you're comfortable with where Devin Bush is, but it seems like the middle of the field for the Steeler defense is still where teams are attacking.
It is. And but see, I think there's some signs here as to who should be in which situations. For example, Devin Bush, I just said he covers wide receivers on their crossing routes well. He covers running backs well. He's struggling with tight ends. Mark Barron, on the other hand, seems to struggle with running backs out in space and wide receivers out in space, but he's decent at tight ends. He's only been targeted once while guarding a tight end, and that was incomplete. I think maybe there's an answer there saying, hey, let Mark Barron take on the tight ends for most of the plays and let Devin Bush cover underneath passes and let him take on those crossing routes. And that's where you use Devin Bush's speed of running sideline to sideline. And that's where you use Mark Barron's savvy of being a linebacker and a safety and letting him work the different depths of the field. I think there's some answers there. And yes, Mark Barron hasn't been the best. He's, you know, 10 targets, allowed nine catches, 86 yards, 4 first downs. You know, not all 9 completions were either to receivers or running backs. But he's not spectacular, but they're finding out some answers. And I guarantee you right now they're looking in film and they're seeing, you know, which situation favors which player. And they're going to start planning around how to optimize everyone's opportunity to make plays.
And the final guy I want to talk about is probably been the most impressive defender so far. And it's not T.J. Watt, it's not Cam Hayward, it's not one of the stars on this defense, but it is a new player. It's Steven Nelson,
yeah,
the cornerback they got from the Kansas City Chiefs. You have to be impressed with him so far. Look, D.K. Metcalf had a nice touchdown catch in that game, but it did not come against Steven Nelson because when he was guarded by Steven Nelson, he was shut down. Nelson so far, according to your charting so throughout the year, 10 targets, just 3 completions for 32 yards. What have you seen from Steven Nelson so far?
I mean, he's done everything asked of him and more. When you look at those numbers and legitimately, so 10 of those targets, so he had 10 targets on the season right now. 9 of them came in the Seahawks game. He was only targeted once against the Patriots. Of all the picking on that Tom Brady did, he stayed away from Steven Nelson, which is odd because he used to pick on Steven Nelson with the Chiefs. But he targeted him one time. It was incomplete. You know, you come into this game, Russell Wilson made it a point to try and target Steven Nelson. And he only completed 1/3 of his throws for 32 yards, only allowing 2 first downs. Had a second pass breakup, but there was a penalty, so it wiped out the stat of the pass defense. But Steven Nelson is playing lights out. Between Tom Brady and Russell Wilson, there is a passer rating of 40.42 when targeting Steven Nelson. That is exactly what you want. Now, you know, with I don't have those numbers for Cody Sensabaugh or Artie Burns, but I can imagine
they weren't that good. They were. I can tell you right now, they exactly. weren't that good.
exactly. And now this is a thing. You know, teams will still probably challenge Steven Nelson, but after maybe 5 or 6 weeks of this, if he can maintain this, and especially that was Brady and Wilson. Now he's going to get to go up against Lamar Jackson, Andy Dalton. Eventually they're going to face Josh Rosen this week. He's got Jimmy Garoppolo. None of those guys have the pedigree of the elite quarterbacks they just faced. If he keeps this up, he could, you know, teams might be saying, okay, let's not target Steven Nelson. Let's try to throw elsewhere. And that's how you get them to make mistakes. You get them to throw to other areas and you force them away. And then he lives up to his Twitter name. He's Nelson Island.
All right. So one final thing I want to do, Chris, and that is change my prediction. So here's why. To peel back the curtain a little bit, we recorded that crossover episode that you heard yesterday. We recorded that on Tuesday, right? Because that ended up being the Locked On 49ers crossover Wednesday, right? But we didn't want to do a crossover on Wednesday. We had more to go over with Mason and Minka. So Chris and I recorded that on Tuesday night. Clearly, our heads were in the Minka-Mason space and not the, you know, thinking about this 49er game just yet. So I went on that podcast and I said, look, I already had the Steelers losing this game with Ben. Why would I change it? with Mason, right? Bad things happen when the Steelers go out west. So there's no way, you know, there's no way they're going to win this game with Mason because they weren't going to win with Ben. So I had a 28-20. I'm changing it, Chris. I'm changing it. And here's why. I've been thinking all week about the same thing. It's just been bothering me all week. I keep thinking about the idea that crazy things happen when the Steelers go out west. And I kept thinking about crazy things that would happen. I just kept thinking, well, you know, they're going to get blown out. I mean, that's what happens when they go out west. You saw the Denver game last year. They lost a stupid game. You saw the Oakland game, right? You know, everybody knows what happens when the Steelers go out west. It's bad things. And it's usually blowouts. But then I started thinking, well, that wouldn't be that crazy this week. Because the Steelers have a backup quarterback and a defense that has struggled through 2 weeks. Why would it be surprising if they go out west to get blown out? That would not be surprising in any way. So I'm changing my prediction to this. You know what the craziest thing that would happen in this game is if it all just worked. What if Mason Rudolph looks great? What if the defense with Minkah Fitzpatrick looks great? What if the Steelers and Mike Tomlin, who has done this in the past when his team's backs are against the wall, they don't shut down, you know, they don't give up. In fact, they come out stronger than ever. You saw that last year when they lost to the Raiders and then came back the very next week and beat the eventual Super Bowl champion New England Patriots. So that's right. Hater Tony is gone. Hype Man Tony is here, and Hype Man Tony is predicting a huge Steeler win. I got something like 30-10. I mean, a gigantic win. Filled with, I think it happens, and if it happened, it would happen like this. Defense gets big turnovers. You know, whether that's with Minkah or whether that's with a, you know, like you talked about, Steven Nelson, who's been so good in coverage, or just getting pressure on Jimmy G, as you talked about, the 49ers offensive line has some holes there to exploit. Get some turnovers, get Mason Rudolph some short fields. Mason was able to convert that. This offense was able to convert both turnovers into touchdowns a week ago. So, you know, they got to do that again. And if they do, I actually could see this team blowing out the 49ers, as crazy as that sounds for how negative I've been on this podcast for the last 2 weeks with this team. That, to me, Chris, that's the craziest thing that can happen.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am flabbergasted. We have Tony the Hater predicting the Steelers to win.
Well, I predicted them to win last week. I predicted them to win against the Seahawks.
So that means we need you to predict them to lose because that didn't work last week. Anyways, it's
fine. Well, I predicted them to get their butts kicked by the Patriots.
You were right there. But I think you cursed them. You know, I cursed them. That's totally what you did there. Anyways.
Do you want to change your prediction, by the way? You still have the opportunity to go back on your prediction.
I'm going to change it a little bit. Instead of 21-20, I'm going to say 24-17. I am going to give them a little bit more room to win. I think that Mason's going to be able to have a better game than most people think. And I think he's going to be able to put together some drives, which gives the defense more time to recover. And, you know, the 49ers podcast you were on, they were asking about how the Steelers are going to handle their pass rush. Meanwhile, they're facing the team that has led the NFL in sacks for two consecutive seasons. I think Jimmy Garoppolo should be worried about his own pocket. And I think that's one way that the Steelers get after them. But they need a lead to protect. There has to be pressure on Jimmy Garoppolo to put up points. You know, I'm saying get up 10, 14 points at some point so that Jimmy Garoppolo is dropping back thinking, okay, I got to make things happen or this game's going to be over. And then that's when you see the brash decisions being made. That's when you see more mistakes coming out, and that's what eventually leads to the turnovers happening for the Steelers. But it all starts with putting pressure on them by getting the offense working.
Yeah, and you know the 49ers are going to come out and they're going to be keying on the running game and making sure that this game is put on Mason Rudolph. So I hope that the Steelers don't come out super conservative with Mason and try to protect him a little bit by, you know, going run pass on that first drive or anything. You know, let Mason, you know, let him get out there, get loose a little bit. Like we talked about, they did such a good job last week of giving him easy throws. Do that again. Get this offense in rhythm early. Don't, like Chris talked about, don't just go three and out to start the game and put that defense in some tough situations early on. And look, this I'm telling you, this could be a Steeler win and a big one. And boy, what we'll be talking about next week if the Steelers do come out with a big win, because so much of the national talk about the Steelers is about how this season is over. And, you know, they're stupid for giving up the first round pick because they're going to be tanking and all of that. We'll see. We will see what happens on Sunday. Before then, though, Chris, let people know where they can find your work.
As always, find me on Twitter at Carter Critiques, breaking down things all the time there. I love to make jokes. So if you want a good follow, hit me with the follow. I will follow you back. And anyone that's been following me over the past couple months, you'll probably notice that I'm following you back. I'm always happy to interact with fans. Hit me with an at, comment on anything I say, you know, and or direct message me if you'd like. I love hearing from you guys. We love hearing from you guys. And please continue to support the podcast. We thank all of you, Missy A and Mike C. We thank you for the 5-star ratings on iTunes, Apple Podcast reviews. We appreciate that. Any of you guys out there that are listening, please give us a 5-star review. Leave us a comment. Tell us what we're doing right. We thank you so much for your feedback. It really does help the show when we get those 5-star customer reviews. And that really helps us push along the show. And we love interacting with you guys. You help us get better. As far as my other stuff, I'm the lead NFL analyst with DKPittsburghSports.com, breaking down the X's and O's. We've been talking about Minkah Fitzpatrick this week, Mason Rudolph. I talked today about the run game. There's so much stuff to break down. I also broke down why Steven Nelson's been so successful. If you want to see the film, if you want to see the details and the crazy stats that go into it, subscribe to DKPittsburghSports.com right now. You can get a trial month for just 99 cents. That lets you see what our website's like for a month. If you like it, then you can choose to stick with us. If not, we thank you for checking us out. But I'm sure you'll love what we have to offer. We cover the Steelers, the Pirates, and the Penguins all on DKPittsburghSports.com.
You can follow me on Twitter at Steeler Country. And Chris and I will be back on Monday to give our reactions to Steelers 49ers right here on Locked On Steelers.